Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. For the fifth day in a row, Israeli warplanes this morning bombed West Beirut. Witnesses say the principal targets were mainly Palestinian areas and residential districts along the coast. At first, some people called it a breakthrough on the Beirut crisis. Yasser Arafat, head of the Palestine Liberation Organization, issued a one-sentence statement yesterday after meeting in Beirut with a U.S. congressional delegation. The statement said, quote, Chairman Arafat accepts all U.N. resolutions relevant to the Palestinian question. Representative Paul McCloskey of California, a member of the delegation, said this statement applied to UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, recognizing Israel's right to exist. Soon afterward, though, the PLO's UN observer, Zadie Terzi, disagreed. The statement began to look less and less like a breakthrough, even though Congressman McCloskey stood by his guns.
I think we get into semantics here. It is clear. He also said in the course of the conversation, he had sent every signal conceivable to our government on numerous occasions that they recognized Israel's right to exist so long as it was included in the context of all of the resolutions recognizing the Palestinians' right to self-determination.
McCloskey, a Republican, said this morning he'll recommend that the Reagan administration cut off all military aid to Israel. Bob Simon reports that the Arafat statement is being made light of at the State Department.
The administration urged extreme caution yesterday, and that's an understatement compared to what U.S. officials are saying about the affair. Talking on background, these officials are not cautious, they're convinced. Convinced that what happened in Beirut yesterday was a public relations exercise staged for the mutual benefit of the PLO and a few traveling congressmen. Congressmen not acquainted, as one official here suggested sarcastically, with the nuances of Mideast diplomacy. According to these officials, Arafat wanted and managed to appear forthcoming without really changing his position, and certainly without meeting Washington's requirement for opening talks with the PLO. That is, an explicit, unconditional statement recognizing the State of Israel and Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. U.S. officials are especially afraid that the McCloskey caper, as they call it, could have an extremely unfortunate effect on the psychology of Menachem Begin. If Begin even suspects that the United States is about to crack a deal with Yasser Arafat, he could render that possibility totally academic by invading West Beirut. Bob Simon, CBS News, the State Department.
Bob Fall reports that what Arafat said, meant, or did not mean hasn't changed a thing in Jerusalem, and Israeli officials say it won't change a thing either.
The Begin government considers the remarks a hoax, that one of the prime minister's aides, a tiger doesn't change his stripes just because he starts to purr. Translation, nothing Arafat says changes the fact that the PLO charter still calls for Israel's virtual destruction. And even opposition political leader Shimon Peres, who is increasingly afraid that Israel is getting bogged down in a Lebanese quagmire, doesn't put much stock in Arafat's reported conversion. The Begin government, which awaits without much enthusiasm today's expected arrival of presidential envoy Philip Habib, thinks the PLO is still stalling and that only constant military hammering will get them to leave. So the shelling of Beirut is expected to continue. And officials here will continue throwing cold water on other gestures which they expect the cornered Arafat to make. Bob Fall, CBS News, Jerusalem.
As for Philip Habib, he's now in London conferring with King Hussein of Jordan. More than 350 people are now reported dead or missing and presumed dead after Japan's worst storms in a quarter century. Gordon Joseloff reports on relief efforts.
As the grim task of recovering the dead progresses slowly, authorities in the hard-hit Nagasaki area are struggling with the problems of the living. Food is in short supply. Many homes are without water, gas, and electricity. The piles of muddied merchandise and debris are growing taller on city sidewalks. Only a third of Nagasaki's garbage trucks survived the floods. Four of the city's seven water purification plants are unusable. The list goes on and on. And only now are tales becoming known of some of those who lived and some who died. One of the survivors is a six-year-old girl, a first grader. Seriously injured, she was pulled from the wreckage of her home an hour after it was crushed by a wave of mud. Doctors and nurses have yet to tell her the rest of her family is dead. And then there's Tetsuo and Masa Yamaguchi. They survived the atomic bombing of Nagasaki in 1945. And because they were survivors, they looked forward to the future with hope of a happy life. They did not survive the Nagasaki flood. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Tokyo.
Television viewers in China today were informed of an event unique in that country, a case of air piracy. Bruce Dunning has details in Peking.
Chinese national television showed a brief report on the hijacking, the first ever reported in China. The report showed the four-engine plane that was hijacked Sunday on a domestic flight from Xi'an to Shanghai and its flight crew. No details were given in the television report, and very little information has been released in China's newspapers. None of the reports revealed, for example, that the five hijackers wanted to be flown to Taiwan. First reports had said the hijackers were killed by passengers and crew members, but Chinese news media said they were captured. There were 19 Americans, all from a single tour group, on board the plane. They were uninjured and are continuing their tour as scheduled. Bruce Denning, CBS News, Peking.
Representatives of Westinghouse Electric Corporation and three unions reached tentative agreement in Pittsburgh last night on a new contract, thus averting a strike set for midnight. There are mounting signs today that Iran's invasion of Iraq is faltering and may even be on the verge of collapse. Larry Pintak reports from the combat zone.
The Iraqis say Iran's attacks over the past 12 days have become progressively weaker. The first raid on the night of a week ago Tuesday was a massive one. They say thousands were killed in that attack as human wave assaults were charging toward the Iraqi lines. There have been several other attacks since then, most recently on Friday night. Then the Iranians tried to break through on the south of the battlefront in an area reaching about 3 miles north of the Shatt al-Arab River. They tried to trap the Iraqis behind a lake the Iraqis used in an earlier battle and break through that area, but Iraq says its forces repulsed the Iranians. In the past 12 days, Iraq claims, more than 15,000 Iranian soldiers have been killed. That's almost one-fifth the total number of Iranians killed in this two-year war. And many Iraqi officers here ask just how long this death can go on. Larry Pintak, CBS News, on the battlefields of southern Iraq.
Polish newspapers this morning report indications in Washington that the Reagan administration is getting ready to relax its sanctions against Poland's military government. They published a Washington dispatch from the official Polish news agency saying it has become increasingly apparent that the restrictions are unrealistic and even harmful to U.S. interests and the interests of American banks. Representatives of those banks are expected to meet in New York tomorrow and discuss ways of rescheduling the Polish debt. A national prayer service was held today at St. Paul's Cathedral to commemorate Britain's victory in the Falkland Islands War with Argentina. Dan Revive reports from London.
Weeks after Argentina's surrender, Britain marked the end of the Falklands War with prayers and mixed feelings, as expressed by the leader of the Church of England, Archbishop of Canterbury, Robert Runcie.
We come with our very human emotion, pride in achievement and courage, grief at loss and waste, and really reaching out to God, not just demanding his endorsement.
Just 6 days after the bombings here in London, which killed 10 soldiers, security was very tight, similar to the big event in St. Paul's Cathedral 1 year ago this week, the royal wedding. The same cast of characters today, Prince Charles in his naval uniform, his Princess Diana making her first public appearance since the birth of their son last month, Queen Elizabeth, and Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher also in the congregation of 2,500, singing the national anthem, God Save the Queen, to end the service, to end the war. Dan Revive, CBS News, London.
A riot occurred early today among more than 100 convicts at Archambault Prison in Montreal after they took 10 guards hostage in a failed rescue attempt. Authorities put down the disorder this morning, but two inmates and two guards died. The dollar declined a bit today in Tokyo, and it's mixed on the European money markets. Gold prices are on the downside. The price was fixed in London at $357 an ounce, off 7.5 from Friday's close.